This episode of The Girlfriend Bracket is brought to you by Gathering Magic and CoolStuffInc.com. With free shipping on orders of $100 or more, a 25% buy list bonus, and their ever-popular customer rewards program, CoolStuffInc is the store for all of your Magic the Gathering needs.
They call me Hal. They call me Stacey. They call me Her. They call me Jane.
Everybody, this is episode number 45 of The Girlfriend Bracket. My name is Erin.
I'm Hallie.
I'm Katie.
And I'm Chris.
Let me go ahead and set the scene for you guys. So I am in Milwaukee, Wisconsin right now. It is 45 degrees.
What?
I have all of the windows in my apartment open. I'm currently wearing a t-shirt, jeans, and no socks. And it is February 1st.
It's a miracle.
Am I the only one experiencing like a heat wave right now?
We have a heat wave in Montana.
How warm is it? Like 15 degrees?
Well, it's like 20 or something, but it hasn't snowed in a long time. And every day it's just kind of sunny, but nothing's melting. It's kind of in that awkward stage.
Yeah, I went to a wedding this past weekend, and I purposely picked up a sweater dress because my friend insisted on getting married in January. You can take the girl out of Wisconsin, but you can't take the Wisconsin out of the girl. So I was just like, what do you wear to a January wedding? And I made sure to pick up this really nice Calvin Klein dress, and it had this really thick material. And I was just sweating through the entire thing. Like, you know, they had the heat on in the venue, and then there were all of these bodies. I sweat through my Spanx. I had to take off my Spanx. And I was just like, this was a really bad choice.
I'm sorry I told you to get a sweater dress.
So I would really like this cold weather to come back because my wardrobe just isn't ready for it. We have some new Patreon shout-outs for some recent subscribers. Thank you so much to Ashley, David, Lauren, and Lee. We really appreciate that. We also received some new reviews on iTunes, both of them positive. Thank you, Elder Worm and T. Pyrope, for those. Our woman of excellence this week is a dear friend of the show, Miss Kale Armstrong. I think that's the first time I've ever just said her name. Like, typically when I say her name, it's Kale. I just can't, I can't just say Kale. I've got to really monster it up like Kale, like goddamn Kale. Yeah. So Hallie, why don't you tell everybody why Kale is so awesome?
Sure. So Kale and I have been friends for about 3 years now. She is Kirby's godmother. She is the owner of Kirby's Best Friend, and she is a very good friend of mine. We've been part of the Lady Planeswalker Society together for as long as I've been part of the Lady Planeswalker Society. She was one of the original members. And in the time that I've known her, I've just seen her improve so much. She cares a lot about the game. She cares a lot about people who play the game. And she, while she isn't necessarily someone I'd consider a competitive player, she has been seeking out, you know, better players to play against. And she cares a lot about improving at Magic. And this weekend, she and I went to GP Vancouver along with her husband and a couple of our other friends, and she made day two, which was awesome, considering she's only ever played in one GP before, and that was the time I begged her to be my teammate for Team Sealed because I didn't have a team. She did really well. Her pool was not the best, but she made the best of it. She played really tight. She exceeded her and everyone's expectations, but she just sort of rose to the occasion and played her best, and I'm really, really proud of her.
So GP Vancouver, you were there, Hallie. Our friend Adam Jansen won.
Mm-hmm.
That is Morgan's husband. Yay!
Yay!
I was very happy for him, and I had to laugh at her tweets, though. She was like, I totally slept through the copies. I was like, I thought you married people were supposed to, like, support one another. She's just like, I was tired.
Happens.
But it was a limited GP. And Hallie, what was your experience like there?
I played a lot of Magic this weekend, you guys. I not only played in the main event, but I played in 3 side events. So it's all kind of running together in my head. But I didn't have the best pool in the main event. I had a very good pool in a side event, but it was one of those really tricky pools where you have some very good creatures and some very good threats, but you just don't have any removal. I had, you know, one black removal spell, one white removal spell, one red removal spell, and I was just kind of like, come on, why can't I make this come together? And I would frequently run into people who would go, like, you know, turn three Drana, turn four Kalidus, or who would play Reality Smasher, or who would, you know, minus four Chandra and wipe out my board. And it was just sort of this, like, comedy of errors kind of thing. So I was not very lucky in the main event, but I did well in some side events. I essentially won a box worth of product, so I brought home, you know, a full draft set of Oath of the Gatewatch, and I'm excited to draft that with people. I definitely enjoyed going to the GP. I enjoyed, you know, seeing some of my friends from out of town. I met a bunch of listeners. You know, thank you to Joe, Jordan, Darcy. I'm trying to think, there were a whole bunch of listeners that I met. They were all really cool, and I was really glad that I got to interact with so many people. But, you know, I did have a couple qualms about the event itself. As people were mentioning on Twitter, it did go a very long time. The event was understaffed, and it took a very long time to distribute product during the player meeting. So the player meeting ran longer than usual. Many of the rounds ran 15, 20, sometimes more than 20 minutes longer than they were supposed to, which was a little difficult for some of my friends who were playing in their first GP. They were coming up to me and saying, you know, is it always like this? And I was just like, no, I don't understand why it's taking so long. But that was, you know, kind of unfortunate, but overall, I, you know, enjoyed the experience of going to Vancouver. It was a really great city. And yeah, I had a good weekend, you know, in spite of everything.
Did your impression of Oath of the Gatewatch change between the, you know, so you obviously did some practice and things like that. And then, you know, after the event, you know, did your impression change?
Definitely. I wasn't really sure what the strongest archetypes were going into the event. There were certainly cards that I knew were powerful and that I wanted to build around. But aside from, you know, the Black-White Allies deck, which was obviously ported from BFZ right into Oath of the Gatewatch, there isn't a ton of crossover between the sets. Like, you know, the Ingest and Process deck that was so streamlined, you know, I had opponents on Magic Online who would swear at me when I would play like a blue-black deck against them because they were just like, oh, I'm so tired of playing against this deck all the time. But that deck isn't, I don't think it's as strong as it used to be because all of the, all the Ingesters and the Processors are in one set and you only get one pack of that or two packs of it in sealed. And now you have all these other cards that do entirely different things. And, you know, while there are some cards in the set that do exile things, it's not quite as consistent. So, you know, the aggressive decks definitely went up in my estimation. I played red-white in two of my side events, and I did very well. You know, I won a draft with a red-white deck that had a lot of threaten effects, which were pretty good in the format. And I was just very impressed by all the removal in white. And I think it's become my the strongest color, whereas blue was the strongest color in BFC.
Mm-hmm. How's green doing?
Green is doing a little bit better, but it's still on the weaker end. I think black and black-white, black-red, the Mardu colors are really where I have liked to be in this format so far. I don't know, I've seen, there was a feature where they interviewed Jerry Thompson and he said he really liked the black-red deck. I was watching Kenji draft the black-red deck earlier today, and I just think it's very strong.
Mm-hmm. So does this mean that you're going to keep playing the format and learn more about Oath?
Absolutely, yeah. It's on Magic Online now, and I'm planning on streaming it, you know, this week and next week, and it's a fun format. I'm really enjoying it.
Melissa DeToro was doing text coverage for the event, and one of the articles that she wrote, which really struck a chord with me, was an article called Strength, Determination, and Love of Magic at Grand Prix Vancouver. Did you guys read this?
Yes.
Okay. I had no idea that this happened to this poor guy. There was a young man at the GP named Van Nguyen. I believe it's how you say his last name. Van had competed in the Super Sunday Series Championship the weekend before, had a really great time with friends, and he had planned to stay in the the area so that he could drive up to Vancouver and play in the Grand Prix. Sunday was the last night of the Super Sunday series. They decided to go out and celebrate. And then Monday night, he was hit by a car. Car ran over his leg. I believe it hit one of the other competitors from the Super Sunday series. He was hospitalized. They were both hospitalized. Van went through 4 days of surgeries and procedures and rest, but was insistent on going to the GP. drove himself up there, and with the help of his friends Jason and Danny, was able to play at the GP. And I was just really amazed at his drive, you know, and how, you know, he in the support that he received from Wizards, you know, they sent him some swag, and he was just so positive throughout the whole thing. I don't know if I could have stayed that way. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was really great, and even the pictures, it was really lovely to see. GP Mexico City was the other event that took place this past weekend, and that one was also limited. Were all three limited?
Yeah, they were. They only did like official coverage of official video coverage of GP Vancouver, but it sounds like throughout the year they're going to have these concurrent GPs that are the same format, sort of like what they did with Modern Masters weekend, and sort of try to tie all the coverage together to create this whole big weekend of an event.
Mm-hmm. From the looks of it on social media, the coverage wasn't that great.
I caught little bits and pieces of it. It seemed like they were having some like technical issues every once in a while. Like I know they were having some issues like cutting in between, matches or going back to the commentators. And so, like, they would start playing the little different, what do you call them? I like to call them promos because I'm thinking of, like, wrestling. But, but, you know, like, all the animations and stuff. And then it'd be like, oh, shit. And then it would, like, go back to the match and, like, you'd see people being like, oh, yeah, my deck, da-da-da-da. And it's like, was that supposed to happen? But like I didn't really see any problem with like commentary per se from what I could see. And when there were technical issues, it kind of seemed like BBD and or not BBD. Ugh. BDM. BDM. So many B's.
Too many acronyms.
I know, right? BDM and Marshall just kind of like played it off and like made jokes about it and stuff. So from what I could see, it was a little wonky, but it looked like they took it in stride.
BBD puked in a sink.
What?
I'm serious. He posted on Facebook that he wasn't feeling good at the event, and he was in the middle of playing, and he told the judge he wasn't feeling well, and he darted to the bathroom, and apparently, like, got a little bit in his hand, lost it in the sink, recouped, went back, and won his game.
Wow.
It's, like, one of my worst fears at a Magic event. Like, when I start to feel, like, not good, like, in the very slightest amount, I'm like, okay, where's the nearest bathroom? How fast would I have to run to get there if I gotta puke? Because you've heard of people, like, at the PT that, you know, just bring a bucket with them if they're, like, sick or whatever.
Frank Karsten did.
Yeah, yeah. Just, I don't want to be bucket girl.
Yeah, that brings a whole new meaning to bucket list. Like some people have a bucket list of things they would like to achieve. That's something you never want to achieve. Yeah, I remember having Frank Karsten on when I did the deck tease, and he was famous for having a bucket by him at the Pro Tour and just made it through. It's just like, and imagine being the opponent of Bucket Girl, where like, you know, you're watching your opponent, and you're like, you know, Angel's Grace, bleh. You're just like, I couldn't do that.
Oh, God. That was an interesting segue into how to get sick at Magic tournaments.
I don't even like to drink a lot of water at Magic tournaments. Like, even if I'm trying to, even the times that I've cut back on soda and I've been committed to drinking more water, I won't drink a lot of water at GPs because I know that I'm going to be in the bathroom constantly. And like, I can't do it.
Getting back to the coverage discussion, I did manage to watch a little bit of it when I got back from the venue last night or Sunday night. We're recording this on Monday. One thing I actually liked about it was that they were, they were making an effort to fill time in between matches with interesting content. Usually the complaint I've had about coverage in the past is that so often you'll tune in and you'll just see like there's a big clock counting down on the screen and you're just kind of like, what's going on here? Why aren't we watching Magic? But I like that they filled the time with, you know, player interviews and, you know, discussions of, you know, who they think is going to do well at the Pro Tour, because the Pro Tour is coming up next weekend. I thought that was really cool. It definitely could stand to improve a little bit. I know some of the camera angles were a little wonky, where they were like interviewing players about cards and they just sort of like put the card out on a playmat and the camera zoomed in, but it was at like a weird angle and you couldn't always see the art on the card that well. So, I mean, they have room to improve, but I think they're definitely heading in the right direction.
How was the music? So now Channel Fireball was famous for that dubstep that they suddenly had, or like the whoop, 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 and people were like, what is this?
Yeah, I don't recall. I mean, the segments that I watched, like I watched, they did a segment with Gavin Verhey. They did a segment with Jerry Thompson. They did a segment with like Rich Hagen and BDM talking about like players to watch on the Pro Tour. I didn't notice any music in the background. But then again, I didn't watch a ton of coverage because I was there. So I'm not sure what was going on. There were lots of hours of footage that I probably missed.
Speaking of Channel Fireball, did you see that they just unveiled their Owen Turtenwald pack rat token?
Yep.
No, I haven't seen that.
Owen Turtenwald is officially a rat. Yeah, it's a rat with his face, like in the style of the art that they have, and it's an actual pack rat token. So, and they're calling it the O-Rat.
Nice.
He seems to be taking it quite well. Like, he's being a good sport about it. Like, I was just like, is he okay with this? Because I don't know if I'd be okay with somebody calling me an O-Rat. Just like,
Well, I definitely have to get that token now, because I have pack rat in my cube, and I make a point of getting all the tokens for all the cards in my cube. And for the past, like, several months that we've been cubing, I've just been using like Rattatas, like the Pokemon cards to represent the rat tokens. But if there's an actual pack rat token now that people are using, I would totally pick that up.
GP Mexico, there was a lovely interview with Chris Bakula, who is really popular in the community, very well known. And I actually related a lot to this interview because Bakula was talking about, is it Picula or Pakula?
I think it's Pakula.
Pakula. Okay, so I want to make sure, so it's no shade if I pronounce it wrong, but they were talking about how Pakula has a long history with Magic. He has been playing for a long time, almost 20 years, back-to-back top 8 appearances at Pro Tours Atlanta and Dallas in late 1996. He is the face of the card Meddling Mage, the original face of the card, which we all know and love. And then after that, you know, he kind of stopped doing well. He kind of became less involved with competitive Magic. He started a family, his career picked up, and he was just sort of lamenting about the difference there, how when you come from, you know, the highest highs and suddenly you come back to the game and you can't devote as much time to it as you'd used to, how do you deal with that? You know, how do you become more comfortable with where you're at and what you can devote to the game? And I really related to this, especially with, you know, coming from World of Warcraft. You know, I was really good at World of Warcraft, and then I stopped playing to come to play Magic, and I never really became as good at Magic as I was at WoW. And when you just sort of naturally take something and then you suddenly have to work at it again, it's a really strange feeling. And I also really related to that just in a number of ways. And I really appreciated his mindset and how he's just sort of kind of made peace with it, where he's like, this is what I have. I'm doing the best with what I have to work with. And I really think people should read this, because it not only gave me some good insight into him, but, you know, just to, I think this is something we don't often talk about. It's just that feeling of, you know, it losing when you've never really lost before. It's just a strange feeling.
Yeah. And I think it kind of applies to like a lot of aspects of life, like even outside of Magic. You know, you do something for a really long time and you're really good at it, and you take a break and you come back and it's really difficult and it sucks to come back. I was kind of feeling this way. So I'm judging a pre-TQ this next weekend, and I haven't judged in like 6 months or something. And I was just, there's been some policy changes and I'm like trying to figure them all out. And I'm just like, wow, I do not feel on top of my game right now. But, you know, for a long time, when I was judging like a pre-TQ every weekend, I was like kind of in the zone. And now that I'm out of the zone, I'm like, wow, I wish I was back in that zone, but I can't get there. It's hard to get back there. And I think that you can just relate to this in so many different parts of life.
it's much more difficult when you've never had that taste of it, you know, and that's kind of where some of my tilting and my feel bads have come from recently is I feel like I've kind of started this trend of like starting off really, really strong at events and then just shitting the bed, you know, so like I'll go 4-1 and then I'll lose the next three. And if you start off not doing well, it doesn't really feel as bad because you're keeping the bench warm. You're still at the back tables. But when you get to like table 25 and you're like, holy shit. And you look back and you're like, all those tables and all those place markers. But then like you start the decline and you're like at table 47 and you're like, oh, I see that's where I sat last round. And then like you lose this one and you go to table 125 and you're like, ugh. And you're doing like when babies do the gimme motion. And you're like, yeah, you know, but if you just sat at the tables, if you stayed at table 250 or you stayed at table 300 and you never got that taste, it wouldn't bother you as much. But when you get that little taste of something and then you lose it, it hurts that much more. And you're just like, I had it, if only for a moment.
Yeah. And sometimes it's frustrating when you feel like you hit like a plateau where I was like on my top eight plateau. And then maybe the next few PTQs I play, it's just like a downward slope from the plateau. And it's like, no, I just want to be back on my plateau. I don't even need to win, but my plateau is now out of reach.
It's also sucky because you do start to feel like none of it mattered, you know, where it's like going back to my WoW days. It's like, I remember, you know, I had all these really great kills and I had all this really great gear. And like, I tried coming back to the game in a recent expansion and people were like, so, you know, what's your resume? And I was like, well, I haven't raided in a couple years, but I used to kill all these things. And they're like, that's nice. So you haven't seen anything. And I'm like, ooh. And I kind of feel like, you know, you see that sometimes with these old school pros, you know, they've won pro tours, they've won GPs. But if you go to like, you know, a GP now, these people have no idea who you are. You know, that doesn't really mean anything now. And that's just a really strange feeling when you're like, I have all of these things. I have all these accolades. Ew, I still have to, I'm still coming in, you know, 500th place. I'm still coming in 1,000th place. Doesn't that mean anything? And unfortunately, it doesn't feel like it does.
Yeah.
SCG Columbus was this past weekend. It was a standard event. Four Color Rally won the whole thing again.
Hey.
Have you built that deck yet, Hallie?
No, I've been thinking about it, but the thing is, so I'm going to GP Houston at the end of February, and I obviously need to decide on a deck because I'm not all that into Abzan anymore. But everyone who's played Rally has basically told me, like, this deck is really hard to play. You have to put in time to learn it. And I was like, okay, can I put in a month to learn it? And they were like, probably longer than that. So I don't know.
You could always follow our woman of excellence, Emma Handy, and she can give you some advice.
That's true. I could always ask her for advice. I also really like the deck that Tom Ross played, though, and I think that is kind of up my alley, so I may give that a try.
Yeah, Red Black Dragons did very well. There were 5 copies in the top 32. He said that one of the best cards in the deck was actually Thopter Engineer, which, Chris, you've used that card. Yeah, Grasp of Darkness is in this deck, Fiery Impulse, Draconic Roar, which we haven't seen a lot of, and that looks like a really spicy deck. It does look like the Abzan decks have moved on to Abzan Blue.
Mm-hmm.
And is that something you agree with, Hallie, as our Abzan expert?
Well, our former woman of excellence, Whitney Otteson, is a big Abzan Blue player. She actually finished X5 at GP Oakland with Abzan Blue. And she was telling me that she felt that the counter spells gave her a little more of an edge against Rally. And I don't think that's an unreasonable thing to do.
It's interesting because I read an article this week. I don't remember who it was by, but they were basically talking about how, you know, that used to be sort of the, like, when Rally first started doing well, that was people's sort of answer to it, was like, oh, I'll just stuff a couple dispels in my sideboard and I'll take care of Rally. And people are like, no, you need a little meatier plan if you're going to take them down. And so I'm a little concerned that just having 2 negates or having 2 dispels is not going to be enough.
Mm. Yeah, well, I mean, some of these decks are playing Reflector Mage, which seems kind of cool. Another interesting piece of tech I've seen for Abzan Blue is playing main deck Stubborn Denial. There's a player locally here in Seattle who's been doing that and says that, you know, he's been having some success with it. And, you know, when you have a lot of large creatures in your deck between Anafenza, Rhino, Warden can get big. Sometimes you can put counters on Wingmate Rocks. Sometimes you have a Gideon that's activated. I mean, it can be good, I think.
Mm-hmm. How do you feel about Sylvan Advocate in the Abzan lists?
I personally haven't played with it, but I hear it's very good with shambling vents.
Yeah, I was. I've seen Abzan players talking about it, and I've seen a couple ramp players that still swear by it, but I just can't. Did you know that the name really means landlord?
Sorry, that's
what? Sylvan Advocate. Yeah, in playtesting in R&D, his name was, it was supposed to be, I think they based it off of Kamal, and then it turned into like Landlord, like that was the nickname in testing, and then Sylvan Advocate, Sylvan Land, yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah, that's, I'm just full of fun facts today. BBB's puking places, nicknames of cards, I've got it for you. I've got everything you need right here. Atarka Red continues to leave out Teemer Battle Rage. It does seem like they've moved past that, and they are continuing to splash black for Painful Truth and Self-Inflicted Wound. So I guess the question is, I mean, we talked a little bit about it, but like, how do we beat Rally? Because it seems like Collected Company even, Bant Company came in second place. Collected Company is just sort of the card to beat right now. Like, how do you, I mean, do we just jam Hallowed Moonlights? Like, what do we do?
I saw some people doing that, which seems okay. I don't know. I still don't have very much experience. Again, I just want the deck. I just want to pretend like it doesn't exist and just hope that it kind of goes
can't
away.
Do that.
Yeah, I know it sucks.
You played Jeskai Black at the GP, Katie. Did you face it at all?
I didn't. I did play Andrew Rudiger for a few games before the GP started. And I think we were like 1-1 and kind of stopped in the middle of the third game. But it was like sometimes the deck just kind of beat itself or like lost to itself. It was like I would just kind of do my thing and hope he didn't do his thing, and sometimes it would just work out and that seemed to do okay. But I think overall the deck is problematic, but maybe it's just a combination of Dispel and Hallowed Moonlight and other spells and board wipes and just a wide variety of things.
Well, it just seems like the deck has an answer for everything, where it's like, you know, so at first people were like, oh, this deck can't be successful because of Anafenza, and then they had Sidisu's Faithful and Murderous Cut, and that really wasn't an issue, and then people were like, oh, well, Hallowed Moonlight. Well, the deck doesn't even necessarily need to rally to be successful. Like, it can just beat you down with shitty creatures. And now Kalidus has come out, and people are like, oh, Kalidus is going to be the thing. Well, yeah, I watched somebody bounce that, too. And so it just feels like any time an answer comes into the format, they have an answer for it. You know, the deck doesn't seem to fold to very much. Flaying Tendrils was another card where people were like, oh, this is going to take down really. Well, it doesn't matter if it has a husk out already. It doesn't matter. It's just going to sacrifice to the husk and it won't exile anything. And the deck seems to do a really good job against hate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's pretty resilient. And Reflector Mage is essentially like Sidisu's Faithfuls 5 through 8 now. So it's even more consistent.
Yeah, so it's just a really scary deck on all fronts, and I'm interested to see how long this keeps up. Like, I'm kind of glad I don't really have any standard events for a while, where it's just like, ooh. I mean, I really enjoyed Oakland. Like, I'm actually really glad that I did go with you guys and that we played standard together, and I feel like that was, I actually really enjoyed myself, and for a while there I wanted to keep playing standard. I was looking to do some testing with the ramp decks, but ramp I don't think is very good right now, and just seeing just Collected Company all the time, I'm like, pass. That's not a good time for me. SAG Columbus also hosted a Modern Classic event. This was the second week after the bannings happened. Burn, I think there were 4 or 5 copies of Burn. I think that Burn is the deck to beat right now. Do you guys agree?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I just feel like Burn has an answer to, you know, it answers Infect, it answers Tron. You know, it's always been good against Jund. And I think we kind of misjudged that. I think people were, you know, we thought Tron would take over with Splinter Twin gone. And then people were saying, well, I'll play Infect to beat Tron. And Burn just seems to take care of them all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I'm definitely prepared. I'm definitely preparing for Burn when I go to regionals this weekend. Burn continues to run less Skullcrack. There were a couple of decks that only ran one. So I'm just like, they just don't seem, I guess they just don't seem concerned about the life gain. And they are all maxing out on Eidolon, whereas Eidolon used to be like 1 or 2 copies. Well, now they're going the full 4 in the main deck. So that's definitely bad news. No black-white Eldrazi decks in the top 16.
Interesting.
And it didn't do well at the last one either. Like, what? Where is this deck?
It's just on Moto, apparently.
I mean, I heard from people that were at the event that it was there, but for whatever reason, it's just not putting up the results. Like, I wonder what's, I mean, I hear Burn is bad news for it too, so maybe Burn's just, you know, taking care of everything, but I'm really surprised because the hype was just, was very strong for a while.
Yeah, the top eight kind of scares me for the deck that I play, because it's Infect, Scapeshift, Burn, Two Tron, Jund, Zoo, and Affinity. And Zoo, Affinity, and Burn are all really good matchups for control, but Scapeshift and the Two Trons are just so bad. Any deck that's based on land is just bad.
Yeah, I'm the opposite. The Naya Zoo list is actually just Burn with Nacatl. So it's really not a zoo list, but I'm actually the opposite. Like, Scapeshift is fine. Burn I can do. Tron is laughably good for me. Jund is fine. But yeah, I just don't want to see Zoo and Infect. Like, those are the ones I don't want
to
see.
You can send them to my tables, and I'll send you the lands.
Okay, I'd really appreciate that. But needless to say, I have made changes to my sideboard, so hopefully I have a better shot at those. So Jund also, Jund has made room for Doomblades, probably to combat Affinity, because Abrupt Decay doesn't really do anything against the Nexuses or the Nexai. And Green Red Tron, for the most part, has completely moved Relic of Progenitus to the sideboard. So if you were thinking of playing a graveyard deck, they used to run four in the main, and now they don't at all. So it might be a little better for you. So who's going to SCG Regionals this weekend? I know Chris, you and I are. Hallie, are you going?
I'm planning on going, yeah. There were a couple tournaments going on this weekend, but one of them was moved to Sunday because the TO realized that there was Modern Regionals going on. So I'm planning on going. I'm probably playing Burn. My friend Carolyn from Vancouver, who I got to hang out with this weekend, is coming down for Regionals. And she was talking to me about Burn and how she feels it's well-positioned, and took a look at her deck, and I like it a lot, so I'm probably going to consult with her and consult with probably my friend Simon, my Burn player friend, and give it a shot this weekend.
Hallie Annette Santo, you know, how could you do this to me?
Some people just like to watch the world.
Oh, God. She went there.
There is a viper in our midst. Oh my God. We shared a houseboat with you.
Girl likes to win.
Yeah, that's the way to do it.
She's not wrong.
Oh man. All right. I guess you can give us like the inside tech then.
Okay, I'll do that.
So you go to regionals and you burn people's faces off, and then you can like tell your so that you understand like why are you guys running less Skullcrack? Do you know why that is?
I do not know, but I plan to find that out this week.
Okay.
It's probably a lack of I don't know. I mean, there aren't a ton of Coco decks running around, and that seemed to be the deck that had a lot of life gain in it, but I'm not sure. I don't play a ton of Modern. That's mainly why I wanted to play Burn, because it's an archetype that I have played before and that I feel like I could fall back on in a fairly unknown meta. So I will do some research and report back.
Okay. And when you go to the Burn meetings, like, in, you know, I'm imagining it like the Little Rascals and like the He-Man Woman Haters Club, when you go to your treehouse, tell them not to use Destructive Revelry. Just, they don't need it. Tell them just to pack Smash the Smithereens. It's fine.
Okay, sure.
You're going to be our little spy. You're just going to go in there and, like, pass the enemy information.
Will do.
Speaking of enemies, there has been a lot of debate recently about the new rule regarding the custody, too. So back in August of last year, Wizards announced that starting this year, all players with an X-3 record at the end of day one will have the opportunity to come back and play day two on Sunday. This was a change that was suggested by some players, because for many Grand Prix attendees, playing in day two, even if they can't make top eight, is considered to be a really big achievement just by itself. And so Wizards was really happy to make that change. And I think that's the change that we were all excited about when the announcement was first made. However, recently, some pros have spoken out about this, saying that it makes the day twos much longer and people would like to leave on Sunday. And they're implying that it makes it so that you can't leave on Sunday because you don't know if you're going to do well. You don't know if you're going to top 32 or you're going to top eight. And they're also saying that these people who are making day two like this have such a small chance of cashing that they're affecting other people's chances of cashing, and just a lot of negativity around this. What do you guys think?
My opinion when I first heard it was, it's not all about you. Like, I mean, they've said before that Grand Prix are just, they're for anyone and everyone. It's not just about, you know, the pros and who's doing well. Like, are those the people that are mostly featured? Of course, you know, because we all have our favorite players, just like, you know, you do in, like, other competitive things like sports, etc. And I just feel like a lot of people on Twitter said this, and I agree with them. Different people have different goals for what they want to accomplish when they go to a Magic event. And if I made day two of a GP, that would be a very interesting turn of events, and I would totally be all about it. Even if I went into day two and lost right away, that is a pretty big deal. And I feel like the spirit of the community should be about wanting everyone else to be better. And I say that all the time. And I think that to make some of these statements that I've read online just seem very selfish. And I guess I just wish that they would think of other people too. Like, I get that a lot of them, you know, they live off their Magic winnings, or, you know, they're always chasing, you know, the dragon, so to speak. And I just don't understand why everyone's just so butt devastated about the whole thing. It's not like it's the end of the world. I mean, did a lot of them still do well? Sure. So I don't see what the big deal is. And, you know, I was very excited to see so many people on Twitter this weekend be like, I'm so excited, I made day two. And it made me really happy to see people doing so well.
I'm in the same camp. Like, when I heard all of the people complaining about it, I was like, suck it up. Like, I don't understand why you wouldn't want more people to get more experience against better players. Like, that's the goal of a GP. And I do agree that some of the prize structure could be maybe rethought out, because I did see a few numbers where people were like, you know, half of the 11-4s got cash or whatever, but half didn't on breakers because there was more people. Whereas I guess it used to be that it paid out all the way through the 11, I don't know, something. But it seems like the prize structure maybe could be rethought. But you could still keep, like, the day two cutoff at 6-3. Because I agree, I have seen more people since this 6-3 day two has been put into place that are day twoing. It seems like the community is really uplifted about it overall. Like, I saw a ton of posts on Facebook about Kale making day two, and there was a ton of posts about Whitney making day two in Oakland. And it was just, you know, it seems like a lot of people are just hyped that their friends and family are doing well. And I don't know why that's such a big deal to all the pros. Like, if you're good at Magic, you're still going to do well, right? Like, I don't know why they're worried about it.
Yeah, I'm definitely in the same camp. I mean, I was at a GP this weekend with two of my good friends, Kale and our friend Jordan. And like I said, you know, this was Kale's first individual GP, and she made day two. Jordan had never played in a GP before. He's never even registered a sealed deck before. And he was so hyped that he made day two. He got to play against Alexander Hain and Raphael Levy in the last two rounds. He was just so excited. And I was so happy to see, you know, my friends having a good time and having a good experience. And, you know, if that's what's come of this, I think it's great. One thing I would like to add, though, is that one thing I liked about GP Vancouver was that there were a lot of, like, event vouchers being given out. Like, if you registered for the GP, they gave you, like, a coupon for $20 off an on-demand event, which was cool because all the on-demand events were $20. So it was essentially, like, a free draft. That was pretty cool. One thing they did was if for whatever reason you made day two and you did poorly in your first draft and you wanted to drop, i.e., you know, not do the second draft and play the last three rounds, they were giving away coupons to those people for a free draft. So there was incentive for people who, you know, just wanted to make day two and, you know, weren't interested in pro points, weren't interested in cashing, you know, just wanted that experience of playing at that level and, you know, were kind of burnt out after doing poorly in the draft. They could just go and just do an 8-person draft. And I thought that was really cool. And I would like to see that implemented at more GPs because I think it made those people's experiences even more positive.
Yeah, I found it interesting, and I said this on Twitter, that, you know, the same pros that tell people the way to get better at the game is to play better people are now getting mad at people who are excited about going 6-3 and having the chance to play better people. It's like they're saying, well, I said better people, but not me and not here. And if you could like take a step back, like I don't want your like casual germs on me. Like it just sounded really hypocritical to me. And, you know, I feel like, you know, there has been this shift towards, you know, making GPs more friendly to everybody. You know, you're seeing a focus on cosplay. You're seeing a focus on panels. You know, the shift towards prize tickets, which we even see at the opens now. You know, the classics no longer award cash. You get tickets for playing. We tend to forget that we exist in a vacuum. You know, the majority of Magic players are not going to GPs. They're not going to opens. You know, they're playing at FNM. They're playing at pre-releases. They're playing at the kitchen table. And so this is an attempt to get them to come out, to get them to, you know, do something they would normally do. You can go to a GP now and not play the main event and still have a really good time. You know, GPs are not just good for one thing anymore. And it does seem like there's been this attempt to make them less, you know, of these high EV, you know, grindy places. And I think that's wonderful. And I just feel like the people that feel this way are ultimately on the wrong side of history, because it doesn't seem like this is going to change. It doesn't seem like they're going to go back and remove the prize tickets and make it all about cash and get rid of all these things. There's clearly an audience for these things, and I think they're only going to cater to them more and more. Listener question this week. Be sure to send your question to thegirlfriendbracket@gmail.com. This is from our friend Barbara, who was also a previous woman of excellence. We're just plugging all the women tonight.
That's what we do.
We're bringing up Barbara and Whitney, and it's just wonderful. And Barbara sent us a text after GP Oakland, and she says, I have a question for you. As women, we often face multiple competing roles, like wife, mother, job, student, etc. What are some of your preferred methods for getting an edge at playing Magic when you cannot spend hours at FNM or playtest? I love listening to your podcast while I'm multitasking, usually while doing laundry.
For me, I have really been getting out a lot of enjoyment out of brewing decks during my downtime at work, because it's allowing me to look at cards differently, to think about different archetypes that I could play. You know, before I just wanted to play control, and now I'm like, well, maybe I want to play a creature deck. Maybe I want it to have a theme. Maybe I want to do these other things I never thought about doing before. And I think that that's kind of helped me grow more as a player and kind of think outside the box a little more. I also like to just goldfish on my breaks, you know, just to be like, okay, these are some changes I made to my deck. Like, what do I think? Like, if I was playing against this matchup, like, what would I do? Would I do this then? Or, you know, do I like the way this card plays out? And I also like to just kind of read through the comprehensive rules, as nerdy as that sounds, because I'm studying for level one. But, like, when I try to think about, like, examples that they present you, you know, in there to say, like, well, this creature has this and this creature has that, then you can't do this. I try to, like, apply it to, you know, cards in my deck or situations, you know, that you could run into at an FNM or at an event, and be like, okay, well, this makes more sense now that I'm applying it to something, you know, that I would be doing. It's not just, like, a wall of text that I'm falling asleep while reading. And I think that reviewing that, you know, over time will kind of get, you know, jammed in my brain meats enough that it'll make me play a little tighter. And So yeah, those are some things that kind of help me out.
For me, I put in a lot of time, like a year ago, learning how to play a bunch of different deck archetypes. And it was a period of time in my life where I was grinding a lot, and I picked up an aggro deck and I learned how to play it, and I picked up a burn deck and I learned how to play it, and control and mid-range and tempo. And I think now that I have less time, having that time behind me in the past is oftentimes just what carries me. So, you know, if I'm going to go to a pre-TQ, it's not a substitute for not testing with a deck, but it definitely makes it so your playtesting time can be cut down a lot. So if I'm going to pick up a deck and I'm like, oh, it's a mid-range deck, let me look at it on paper, let me play, like, a few games with it. But if I don't have more time than that, that at least feels decently sufficient for my purposes for, like, a pre-TQ. And if I was going to test seriously for a Grand Prix, I would hope that I'd put in more time than that, but sometimes that doesn't happen. So I feel like the time has to be put in at some point just to get basic Magic strategy down. And then after that, the rest comes a bit easier and, you know, can be less time consuming. And I also rely on my playtesting buddies a bunch. Like, Brooke and Kobe do a bunch of testing. They have a lot more time than I do to devote to it. So the night before pre-DQ, we'll sit down and they'll just be like, okay, this is what this deck is doing. This is what you need to watch out for. This is what's coming in sideboards. And they fill me in a lot. And so I do rely a lot on them and their knowledge.
Yeah, I outsource a good portion of my Magic testing also. I do have a handful of people that I'll, you know, whose brains I'll pick about various things, you know, if I don't have the time to play test myself. But another thing that I do is I just try to surround myself with Magic even at times when I can't be playing. So, you know, if I'm playing with my dog in the morning, I'll put a stream on and I'll watch Kenji or Paul Sheehan or somebody do a draft or talk about their constructed deck, and I'll sort of gain a lot through osmosis just through watching it. I'll listen to podcasts as I'm falling asleep at night. I try to be aware of what other people are doing in the format and what other people's thoughts are, and sort of absorb everything from there.
Yeah, I try to. I've actually found the leagues on Magic Online to be really great for that. You know, you talked about, you know, listening to our show while you do laundry. You know, the leagues are really great for that. You know, you're getting practice against decks and you're able to take breaks where, you know, you play your round, your laundry goes off, you put your laundry in the basket. You know you have to put it away, but you're like, okay, I'll start round two. And then round two goes, you put your laundry away. I can respond to emails if my opponent's taking too long. I try to find things that don't require my complete attention. If I'm at work, I can throw a stream on in the background, minimize the window. I have two computer screens at work. So I can, while I'm reviewing files, I can keep a stream going. I can keep the Pro Tour coverage going. You know, I'm not having to just watch that one monitor to the exclusion of everything else. The other thing I like to do is I like to focus on a pro that happens to play the same deck that I do. So, for example, when I was playing Jund, I would just follow Willy Edel. And Willy was regularly updating his Twitter feed with, tried this card, this didn't really work. He would retweet what Kenji Yamamoto was doing in Japan and see what progress he made with the deck. You know, finding somebody who plays an archetype that you do and that you trust. You're like, if Willy Edel tells me to play something, he's the godfather of Jund. If I'm not able to playtest it for myself, I have confidence that the changes that he made are for the better. And so if I'm not able to do it myself, I at least want people around me that I can trust who can kind of tell me what to do. And so those are the two best things that I can think of, is to find things that don't require your constant attention and find people around you that you can follow and that you really trust. So if anybody's enjoyed listening to our show, how can they find you all and how can they get a hold of you?
So I'm Hallie. You can find me on Twitter at HalCanSan. That's HalCanSan. You can find me on Twitch, twitch.tv/HalCanSan. This month, I'm going to get on a more regular stream schedule. I'll be trying to stream every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday at some point. So you can, check out my Twitch and check out, my Twitter account for notifications on when I go live. And you can also, as always, find my writing here on Gathering Magic.
And I'm Katie. You can find me on Twitter at Mean Mugger. That's MeanMugger. Or you can find me by email at katie.neil14@gmail.com.
And I'm Chris. My Twitter is at THKRIZ. My Gmail is YOTHKRIZ, and my Snapchat, Katie knows very well, it is Cryptic Command spelled with K's.
Does she ever send you things when we're not recording?
She has.
Okay. I thought she just did it for the show.
Nope, she has.
It's not very often. I'm not like a huge Snapchatter, but sometimes I'll be like, hey, Chris, look at this cute dog we have at work.
There's actually a dog that I saw on Facebook just now named Quasimodo, who has like a spinal condition.
Mm-hmm.
And it causes him to look like he's folded into himself. And I was just like, oh no, I can't. Oh no. So one of you needs to click on that and tell me how cute he is. Because if I click on that, I'm gonna feel all sorts of sad. And I'm not cut out for that right now.
We don't need a frosty situation right now.
We don't need a frosty situation. I'm already hormonal as it is. And then with the weather screwing up my emotions, and poor Chris is having to go, like, we got a hotel room for regionals, so there's going to be feels probably.
Oh,
and, right? I mean, well, I guess I should spread the love. I mean, I had a breakdown on Hallie So I guess Katie and Chris, you guys are next.
We're due
so.
For it.
Wait for it.
Buckle up. And I'm Erin. You can find me on Twitter at Original Estrus. It is OriginalEstrus. You can email me personally at estrus@elitistrux.com. The show is on Twitter at the GF Bracket. You can find us on Patreon at the Girlfriend Bracket, patreon.com/thegirlfriendbracket. And you can email us at thegirlfriendbracket@gmail.com. Thank you all so much for listening, and we will talk to you next week. Bye-bye. Bye.